Passion, drive, and patience. The formula of winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything for you to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has it covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices that you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP it needs to be and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Again, ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Summer's coming. Are you ready to unveil that beach bod? Manscaped is here to ensure your body is ready for the wild with their game-changing full-body grooming and hygiene product. Don't be the guy at the beach with Austin Powers chest hair. And maybe you've grown some winter man tits. At least you can make them hairless. It's time to get ready for hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com and getting 20% off and free shipping with my promo code Bubba. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you increase your confidence and level up your full-body grooming game with the Performance Package 4.0. The kit comes with the Essential Lawnmower 4.0 waterproof cordless body trimmer and a ton of other liquid formations to round out your grooming routine. Whether you're trimming your chest or your treasure chest in your pant, doesn't matter. This is the best trimmer on the market. Inside the Performance Package, you're going to find the Manscaped Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Ball Toner, Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant, and Moisturizer. Because we all know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day. Nobody likes nose hairs. So their package comes with the Weed Whacker 2.0 as well. You're also going to get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag, about a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxers. And if you're wearing sandals, you're going to need to get the Manscaped Shears 2.0 Nail Kit. Having the right tools for grooming is essential. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code Bubba at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with promo code Bubba at Manscaped.com. Trim your chesticles with the besticles at Manscaped.com, promo code Bubba.
I've been told we are live. Hopefully. Fantastic. Let's get this show started. I see me on the tubes. This beautiful face, this moneymaker right here. Welcome to the Anna Hummel Show. It's just me in here talking to you guys. At first, I was a little bit concerned. I'm like, how long could I just talk to myself? Apparently, very long. So I'm just basically taking the conversations I have with myself in the shower and bringing them onto the show. And obviously, you guys can call in. We might be taking a few calls, although I feel like, well, the show's been very call-heavy lately. Some good, some great, some terrible, some overstay their welcome. But yeah, if I could get some company on this show, I'm more than welcome to have you. 813-90-BUBBA. First things first, we got to take care of business. And business would include Bubba 199, our first Bubba 199 on kick.com. It's either / the Bubba Army or at the Bubba Army. If you're watching on a desktop, I was having issues with this, and you can't get the Kick deal to work. Use a different internet browser. Maybe switch to an Internet Explorer and get away from Chrome. Because I didn't have Kick probably till about 2 weeks ago. I mean, I was signed up and everything, but I couldn't seem to get it work until Rhett came in and was like, "Hey, dum-dum, why don't you try on Internet Explorer?" And I went, "Oh, well, there it is. Fantastic." So make sure that you're tuned in. Again, that's going to be 8 to 10 p.m. tonight, celebrating the birth of me. Yeah, so that's exciting. Obviously, I'm not really like a birthday. I mean, I am. I just fucking lied. Everybody's a birthday person. Everybody wants to be celebrated. Because I feel like, and I don't know, I want to say men do this just as much as women. I don't think that there's really, it's one thing I think we all share in common is that, like your birthday is like a good proxy of like how much you matter to everybody else. And even though like we don't want to say that out loud, it kind of is true. This birthday was a little bit different because I deleted my Facebook. So that's really the indication, letting the world know that, hey, today's the day I was fucking born. Celebrate me. And that's usually when I hear from just a litany of people that are not a part of my life. But, you know, our entire correspondence is happy birthday. And then I go, happy birthday. And they go, happy birthday. And I go, happy birthday. I'm like, what kind of relationship is this? It's bizarre. It's strange. And I don't want to hear from you. So I deleted my personal Facebook. And and it was just a much smaller circle of people that even fucking knew. So, you know, my immediate family reached out. No one outside of my immediate family that was related to me, blood related to me, reached out. Close friends did. It was funny because, like, Rachel's parents, Reagan's parents reached out to me, but yet my own aunt and uncle and cousins, nobody knew. And that's really what I think it is. I don't think that they are like, oh, it's Anna's birthday. Well, fuck her. I hope that's not the case. It might be the case. But yeah, it was great. I spoke to my sister, which is a rare occasion. I know I don't talk about her too much other than, you know, I have a lot of negative things to say. And that's something I really need to work on. It is bizarre, though. No matter how old I get, and I kind of see this like with Dan and Jay, and they obviously have a much, much different dynamic than my family. But you can be in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and when you interact with a sibling, you just kind of revert back to your childlike tendencies, the roles that you occupied as adolescents or children, and those just shine through. Like, I could talk to my sister, and obviously a lot's changed since, you know, she was a child and I was a child or an adolescent. But then now we're in our 30s, we talk, and it just kind of reverts back to, you know, she tells me that I'm, you know, mean or shitty, and I'm like, you're dumb, or I'm just sarcastic, and she calls me out for that. So it is frighteningly odd how you just kind of revert back to those roles. And it's something I need to work on, but probably won't. But with my sister, it was kind of fun because she was in San Francisco and she is FaceTiming me, and I request her to show me her surroundings. And she's in some like really nice park, and I'm obviously like, where are the homeless people shitting in the street? You know, I want to see the good stuff. And you know, she's just kind of rolling her eyes at me. She's with a friend, a close friend. Probably another, can I say libtard? Oh, I just did. So we're talking, and I use I'm not going to say it because I know we're on YouTube, but I use the R word, you know, in very much the seventh grade way that we all know and love, at least for me growing up in the, when did I graduate? Late 90s, say. When you could freely use the R word, and it didn't mean that it wasn't intended for someone with Down syndrome, and the F word wasn't intended for someone who was gay. It was just how you talked as a seventh grader, and you didn't mean anything bad by it, but it was kind of, you know, it was fun that those words had some bite to it. They're like seventh grade swear words, and then they went from seventh grade swear words to like slurs. You know, slurs for people who are mentally disabled or people who have, you know, a homosexual lifestyle and orientation. It was never meant for that. We never actually called anyone who was that. It was just we were in seventh grade and it was cool and it was kind of fun. And then I can't remember at what point where it was like, we can't do that anymore. So anyways, I'm talking with my sister and I like pregnant pause because I couldn't think of a better word than the R word to describe whatever I was talking about. I think I was trying to say, like, I fell R, and I said it, and she goes, Anna, stop. Don't say that. And you can't, come on, you can't say that to me, because what am I going to do? I start yelling it on the phone, and she's on FaceTime, so she's like, ah! Like, you could see, she was just panicked in this park, and all you hear is like, R, 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 and she's like, what the fuck? So she puts me on mute. It's this whole ordeal. She's really embarrassed because her friend's next to her, and her friend is probably has similar political sentiments and as her. So she's embarrassed that, you know, she's related to this person who's screaming the R word on the phone. And then she sees, you know, Blitz next to me, and she basically said in so many words, please get your bitch on a leash. You know, she didn't say it quite like that, but she's like, can you get her to behave, please? And I'm like, do you know who you're talking to? We're, you know, two peas in a pod. So she rushes me off the phone, and I just think it's hilarious. One of the best birthday gifts ever is just, you know, making my sister uncomfortable and embarrassed. Hey, Brian from Philly, $20 on the super chat. Thank you so much, Brian. Always appreciate your support and your insulated backpacks. Love them very much. So thank you again. Oh, I'll give you a little bit of this. A little bit of horn love there. Yeah, so it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun embarrassing my sister. But then about 5 minutes later, I was like, eh, maybe that's not the best way to try to work on our relationship, is me upsetting her more than I need to. So I apologized, which is, I'm not going to say unlike myself, but, you know, you'll listen, I can be sassy and I can be opinionated, but I can also be self-reflective and realize that I'm wrong often. I often make the wrong choice. But also, it's just kind of fun if you do something shitty and then you just apologize, but you just keep doing that. So you get points for being a good person, even though you never actually change, which is how I like to live my life. So I apologize for embarrassing her in front of a friend and the entire city of San Francisco. And that, you know, I should have been more less colorful with my language and more respectful about, you know, other people and whatnot. But I know my sister likes it. If she was alone in her apartment, she probably would have giggled at least a little bit, but she has to put on the serious, you know, face where you can't say stuff like that. It's just uncouth. 813-90-BUBBA. So, yes, come to Bubba 199 via kick.com, the Bubba Army. We're going to have a great time tonight. I've requested that the ladies dress a bit spicy. And here's the thing, and I don't want to say slutty because that has a shitty connotation, and I don't want to say skanky because that's not, but sexy. Sexy is seems like the right word. Spicy seems like a good word. So we're going to have the ladies dress to the nines for your viewing pleasure so we can, you know, shake them raisins and make that money and just make it a more entertaining show for the viewers to watch when you're watching something that you like looking at, right? Moving around, bopping to music, dancing a little bit. We're going to have Reagan. Unfortunately, not a fan, can't come. Wizzy will be here. Obviously, Merch Crick with the titties will be here, so that's good. I believe Maria Guatemala will be here. So I'm trying to think. Susan Poitras and, you know, a bunch of guys, but, you know, we're not focused on the men's. We're thinking about the ladies. So make sure you tune in for that. It's going to be a really, really, really fun time. But yeah, 36. It's I don't want to say it's like a weird age. It's a great age, I think. It's a great age for men, not so much for women, because women really feel around this time, we're like, okay, usually this is the time you start closing up shop with the children deal. And much like with parties that you don't want to attend but want the invitation, that's how I view breeding as a woman, is that you always want the invite, even if you don't want the child. You want the invitation to be fertile, but you got to also just be like fucking realistic about the matter and you go, listen, I have exited my you know, sexual market prime a long time ago, and I think I'm handling it quite well because, you know, you think of yourself a certain way when I was 21, 22, and just the sorts of things I was able to get away with. I was never the hottest girl in the room, but my looks never hurt me in my early 20s. You know, I was doing all right. But you start to phase out pretty quickly. That's a short shelf life. And then you start to realize that all the guys your age are really hitting their stride, hitting their prime. And they're really not interested in dating you because now they have resources and they would like to date the 21, 22-year-olds. And fair enough. And I did hear from my good friend in California. She called me. We haven't spoken since I was in California, actually. And I've talked about this person before, but she will remain anonymous. She's had an issue pretty much her whole life grappling with what we call reality. She has sheltered herself in a way where she doesn't have to come into contact with the grips of reality all too often because she comes from a very, and I use this word sparingly because I hate the word, she comes from a very privileged background, okay? Is she white? Kind of. Only in skin tone, if that makes sense, not in culture, because I would say she probably does not identify as white, although the complexion of her skin is much fairer than mine. But I would say that she would say that she is from the Middle East, and I believe people from the Middle East now are fucking white, unless you keep moving east, and then you're brown, and then you keep moving east, and then you're yellow, and then you keep moving east, and then you're white again. So we're all just a shade of brown, really, but it was very, what's the word I'm looking for? It was very refreshing to hear from this person and hear just a hint of sanity, a hint of coming to grips with being realistic about the situation. And I've gotten mad at this person in the past because they have told me, you know, everybody, all women and men, for the most part, unless you're married off at, you know, 19 or 20, you're going to have issues dating. And the older you get, the harder it gets, especially for women, where it's like, okay, you've acquired some resources, so you want someone on par, if not, you know, higher earning than you, and you don't want to put up with bullshit. You come to the table with a lot of baggage, so you assume things about people, and that's never good, or maybe you're jaded. When I was dating and trying to get to know people, potential mates, I always made sure to consciously tell myself, like, this is the first time I'm dating. And, you know, not to try to bring a bunch of baggage with me on each subsequent date, because it's not that person's fault. The reason why you're fucked up, you know, maybe you're fucked up from a past relationship. Maybe you're fucked up because your parents fucked up. Maybe you were, you know, you had the sexual assault deal, which isn't good, which, by the way, it seems like the numbers, and I don't know the numbers, but it just seems like that number just keeps getting inflated and inflated to the point where if I didn't know any better and I was an alien and landed on planet Earth, I'm like, everybody get out here getting raped, you know, because it seems like, you know, some crazy statistic like 1 in 4 women have been sexually assaulted. It's like, okay, well, what do we qualify as sexual assault? I mean, I wouldn't say 1 in 4 women have been raped. Maybe 1 in 4 women have had a sexual encounter they now regret and want to file under assault, like maybe, but so, again, I feel like those stats and those numbers are often inflated. Back to my friend. So you come to the table with a lot of baggage. And I always try to tell myself, like, you can't do that because nobody wants to be with that person, even though that's who you really are. So you really have to kind of, like, you have to kind of mute it, put it on the back burner, pump the brakes on who you are, because most people won't like that, at least initially. You have to kind of, you know, you have to put your best foot forward, kind of persuade them and say, I actually do have good qualities. And then you start to, I don't want to say unleash, but then you start to reveal yourself. And with me, because I'm a little, you know, cuckoo, I have to come to the table, try as normal as possible. You know, you don't want to ring someone else's alarm bells because, and I'm pretty good at concealing that sort of stuff. And then you slowly reveal once you can tell they have some sort of emotional attachment to you or they're attracted to you, then you're like, okay, let's see where that tolerance level is, where they're willing to tolerate my true authentic self. Because, and again, every relationship, every romantic or otherwise, is just a cost-benefit analysis. Like, everyone is fucking crazy. There's no one leaves, like, childhood or adolescence or even early adulthood just unscathed. You're going to encounter things that affect you in a negative way. So you got to meet someone who either, you know, complements your mental illness or is willing to just tolerate it because it's like, all right, well, there's a lot of great things about this person, so I'm willing to tolerate that she's fucking psychotic in some ways. So was chatting with my friend, and for the first time in a very, 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 very fucking long time, she was saying some stuff that actually made sense. Things like, you know, I'm not 25 anymore, and we're the exact same age. 1987, she's about to be 36. I just turned 36. So it was very nice to hear her say things like she didn't want to have just like a whimsical relationship. She's now kind of paying attention to the right qualities in men instead of the wrong qualities in men. Because she would date, you know, she's a little bit of a bougie bitch. She likes organic shit. She'll pay $18 for a smoothie in California. We'll keep it vague, Southern California. So, you know, maybe it's not best that you date a guy who has six roommates and wants to live out of a van, who's 4 years younger than you. And yeah, I get it. You both have a creative side to you, but that relationship doesn't have staying power. So when she kind of told me how her last, let's just call it relationship / fling ended, and it was quite anticlimactic, which is often the worst way to end a relationship, at least in my eyes, because, and this was an Illumineers song, and it really moved me, but it's something along the lines of, the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. So, you know, if someone hates you, at least you've impacted them in some way with your presence, with your being. But if they literally don't care, like, that's the worst, where you're just like a forgettable person. And essentially, she was dating a guy exclusively, in quotes, I don't really know. But it was something that lasted like in the ballpark of a year and a half. And when she started to kind of pull away because she realized, you know, he wasn't really serious or whatnot, she was just like, you know what, I'm just not going to text him and see how long it takes him to text me. And he just never did. So if you can imagine like dating someone casually and then a little bit more than casually, but not super seriously, and then you just wait and see if they reach out to you and they don't. And then you reach out to them 3 months later and you go like, hey, how you been? And you give them a little update on your life and they don't respond. Like, my heart hurt for her for, you know, a second. But also, this is why you have to vet people better. I'm a big fan of vetting. Some people would say I'm overly cautious, but, you know, and I'm not happy about the marble situation. I am not happy that a woman was murdered. For those that don't know, and we've talked about this before, I'll just mention very briefly, but, you know, the roommate dated someone. This was back probably about 3 years ago, broke up with him. And then 6 months later, he killed his next girlfriend and then killed himself. So when that happened, and it was right when I started working on the show. So it was in 2020. Initially, I was single and I was saying that, you know, you have to be very cautious as a female dating because you just don't know. And although I'm a big champion of men, I love men. I have nothing against like toxic masculinity. I don't even think that's a thing. I don't even know how you define feminism and wit wave, and I don't really care. I think I got all the rights I need. Quite frankly, I'm done. I think the feminist movement is complete. Much like the civil rights movement is complete. You know, you're going to have racist individuals. I'm not saying you're ever going to like stamp out racism or sexism, but for the most part, under the law, I've got all the rights that I need. And quite frankly, it is complete in my book. So do I consider myself a feminist? I don't know. Sure. Why not? I'm more of like a humanist. Like, I feel like a lot of these things are redundant where it's like, oh, I'm for gay rights and I'm for trans and I'm for black rights and for Asian rights. It's like, and for female rights, it's like, yes, yes, everybody gets all the rights. Yes, this is just a redundant conversation we seem to keep having. So I love men, but I also fear men because men can be dangerous, as we've seen earlier in the show, in the main show, where, you know, sometimes people are crazy and they punch you in the face and they kill you and they rape you. And someone is on the hotline, so I feel like I should take it. So let's do that. Hello? Oh, it's nobody. Okay, fantastic. So I've always been very cautious when it comes to dating, because you should be cautious. You should always err on the side of caution. And that doesn't mean, you know, I don't need to see blood work yet or anything, but I think it's important to meet in a public place and, you know, where there's a lot of lighting and alibis and things of that nature. So I remember the guys on the show were saying that I was paranoid, that I was overly cautious, that I need to just lighten up. And again, I want to stress the point that I'm not happy that someone had to die to make my point. But when the marble situation went down, I was like, do you see what can happen when you don't vet properly? So, yes, I'm a very cautious person. I vet for a long time, not necessarily just for the safety, but also for, like, you know, I'm a very, like, what are your intentions kind of person. But I'm like that with everybody, not just potential romantic partners. So anyways, back to the friend. She was just saying a lot of shit that made sense. I felt kind of bad because it was in a defeatist sort of way. Like, I could see that she'd been jaded by life and the experiences that she's been having for the last several years. And kind of the greatest thing you can do for yourself is enter a moment of self-reflection, or more than a moment, but many moments of self-reflection, and go, okay, I keep falling into the same fucking traps. I keep falling for the same guys. I keep falling for the same old bag of tricks, and I don't want to do that anymore. What can I do differently to change the outcome? Because obviously the definition of insanity is, you know, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So you go, okay, how can I rewind this? How can I make this better for myself? And then to proceed in that direction. And she was saying a lot of those things. And I was like, oh my God. You know, she was still saying crazy shit like, you know, what the universe has in store for me. Okay. Like, you know, you know, thankfully she's not at the point where she's like, oh, you know, Mercury's in retrograde. Like, we're not there yet. But it was like, that's almost like the type of person that I was talking to, the universe and da da da. And she said this thing that I hear a lot of women say, and I don't know quite what it means. And, you know, I'm not trying to be like Red Pill Sally who's calling women out on their bullshit, but it's just so easy because women are very easy to make fun of. Most of them are, because they get overly upset about things. The best, like, debaters in general, or the best people who, you know, present themselves in public and can, are people who are just unaffected. Like, if you're unaffected, you're winning the argument. You don't get too upset. You just have to be like Johnny Cool Guy. Don't get too upset. And when I watch a lot of these Red Pill podcasts, they have a lot of women on there, and the women just get so upset. They get screaming and yelling and, you know, interrupting, and it just helps make the point of whoever they're arguing against. So my friend really has taken a turn in the right direction. She's been defeated by life. She's been beaten down long enough, and she started saying things like, I'm not young anymore. And I'm like, yes, good. Reality is kicking in. Because for many years, she was in denial that, like, she had the sexual agency as like a 23-year-old. And I'm like, no, we don't. We're 34, 5, now 6. We don't have that sort of captivating presence around men all the time. I mean, she's very attractive and she looks much younger, and she would always stress that. I'm like, yeah, but you're not, though. Your eggs are telling a different story. So it was just, it was really nice that she took some accountability and said, listen, if I don't change my ways, I'm going to end up alone. And I'm like, this is great. I was like, I love this. Usually I'm telling you this. Now you're telling yourself this. Thank you for doing my job for yourself. But she did say something along the lines of, and again, I hear this a lot from women, is like, oh, you know, I need a guy who knows my worth. I'm like, what does that even fucking mean? Like, I hear friends say that all the time, knows my worth. I'm like, what the fuck are you bringing to the table other than just complaining all the time about how people don't know your worth? What's your fucking worth? And where is a woman's worth? And do you value the same thing as a man? Because guess, let me tell you something, bitches, they don't value the same things that we do. You know, she starts talking about, you know, how she's educated and has, you know, had a good job. I'm like, guys don't give a fuck about that shit. They don't give one fuck about your accomplishments or your degrees or your what you do for a living. Like, they just want someone, and guys, you could reiterate if I'm right, because I know that I am, is they want someone who's, you know, agreeable, kind, someone who they could see that would be a good mother. Again, these are all like long-term relationship qualities, you know. For hot, for short term, it's just hot, wants fuck, spread them, you know, that sort of thing. But for an actual relationship, someone who's submissive, someone who's agreeable, someone who's kind, someone who brings peace in the home, that's what guys are concerned about. They don't give a fuck about, oh, you got it, your fucking master's in biochem. That's not something. And again, there's something to be said of for, like, you know, someone you can have an interesting conversation with that might help build attraction, but it certainly isn't something that ignites attraction. Like, if you see some fucking hog, but she's, you know, a quantum physicist, that's really not going to do anything for your boner. So I really had to kind of like spell that out for her. I'm like, you are trying to compete like a man. You're thinking like a guy right now, that the guys want what you want. Because you're going, well, I want a guy who's educated, and I want a guy who makes a lot of money, and I want a guy who's a boss bitch or whatever. I'm like, yeah, guys don't care about that. So stop saying that. And she was like, huh? And it is wild to me how many women just don't even fucking have a clue. They're like, but I've been chasing this fucking career deal and the education dream. And I'm not shitting on education, and it is useful, certainly, if you're, you know, trying to get a certain place in life. But if you're looking for a partner, you have to understand that maybe you should talk to men and see what they want. Because I promise you, it's not what you want. It's a little bit different. But a lot of women don't see it that way, because they're just like, well, I want a guy who's rich and tall and good looking. And, you know, I assume that they would want the same, maybe a little shorter. But, you know, all those sort of the earning potential, the come from a good family. It's like, no, but Women engage in hypergamy. They're dating across and up in terms of, you know, social status and socioeconomic status, all that sort of stuff. So all you really have to be to a guy, it's like, seems to be pretty simple, is like attractive to them, obviously, and agreeable, peaceful, a good nurturer, like someone who brings feminine qualities. That is, if you're looking for a traditional guy, which my friend was. She was like, I want a guy who's like traditional. I'm like, right. And that means, on the flip side, that you have to be a traditional woman. And that, those sorts of words coming out of my mouth was like pretty insane, because I grew up in a very progressive household. Like, my parents both worked, very secular. I mean, I did the Jew thing, but like, it was pretty like diet Jew, you know, low key Jew. I got the bat mitzvah, but my sister didn't. My parents were like, I don't fucking care. You know, and I told my parents, God is dead. My parents were like, whatever, dude. Like, they didn't care at all. My dad's a full-blown atheist now. My mom, you know, I don't think she goes to synagogue at all unless someone dies. So we're pretty chill about it. So for me to say things like, you need to be a traditional woman, is mind-blowing. And oddly enough, like, I am not really anything like a traditional woman. I've lived a pretty modern life as far as being a modern woman. I'm pretty much the pinnacle example of that, where I'm in my 30s, I'm not married, I don't have children, I have a job or a career. This is certainly a career, but yeah, I'm kind of just doing my own thing. I'm not the most nurturing person. I've listened to a lot to this red pill community that has been growing, has been getting a lot of steam because it seems like with every movement, there's a, you know, much like, what is it, the laws of thermodynamics, the opposite and equal reaction, where it's like you have this push, this blue pill push of feminism and equal rights, close the gender pay gap, that all that kind of bullshit. And now you have like the Andrew Tates and you have the Fresh and Fit and you have the people who are pushing, the Rollo Tomasi's, who are pushing back saying, no, like there's a reason why like society functions the way it does when people kind of accept and kind of lean into their traditional gender roles, which again, I cannot believe I'm saying this because I am not the poster child for a trad wife is what they call it, like a traditional woman who does those sorts of things. But I also think that there's some utility in some of those tenets that they speak of. So, you know, in my relationship, a lot of women don't like the word submissive. And I get it. Like, I don't like that word either, to be like submissive. I'm like, ugh, I do jiu-jitsu. How do you win in jiu-jitsu? You submit someone else, either because they literally pass out, they get knocked out in MMA or something, or they submit, they do the double tap and they go, I am going to get my arm broken or I'm going to pass out or die. So I have to submit to you. You are superior to me. So it's kind of like a dirty word that I know a lot of modern women don't like, is the submissiveness thing. But how I've kind of reconciled it in my mind is that like when you're with somebody, you're not submissive to all men. Like I'm not submissive to all. I'm submissive to Bubba because I'm scared of him and you know he's the one that pays me. But I'm not just submissive to like a guy on the streets like do this and I'm like yes master, like none of that shit. But like in my personal relationship, like I let the man take the lead, and because I want a man who is a masculine guy, and I know on the flip side he wants someone who's a bit more feminine. So you know, as a female who considers herself to be pretty alpha in most aspects of my life, I consider myself to be, you know, a leader, not a follower. I kind of like dance to the beat of my own drum, like all that sort of shit. When it comes to my personal romantic relationship, I always make sure that I'm kind of like more my feminine energy, just because that A is more peaceful and B, it's nice to be a chick sometimes. Just be like, dude, you fucking do the shit. You kill the bugs. You mow the lawn. You do that shit. I'll fucking take care of the dishes and make the bed and, you know, whatever. Cut the vegetables for the salad because I can't cook. So I kind of gave that same spiel to my friend. And she was very receptive to it, which was nice. I felt like I turned on a light that clearly wasn't on. And she's like, what? I've never thought about it that way. I'm like, yeah, you should start talking to guys and ask them what they like, because it's not what you like. It's something totally different, you know. And here she was trying to chase the bag and make the money and get the education. And that's all grand and great. And if that's what you want to pursue, by all means, but also understand that that's not going to better you in the dating market. If you're trying to go for a traditional guy who's in his masculine energy. And if you want to go for, you know, a fucking blueberry head dude who, you know, it goes by they, them, then fine. That might be fine. But if you're looking for a guy who has masculine qualities, typically he's going to like a woman with feminine ones. So just keep that in mind, a little PSA. Hello, who's this?
D-Buck from Charleston.
Hey, D-Buck from Charleston. What's going on?
What's up, Honor? Love the show. Everything you're saying is completely true. I agree with, but what I do think is guys do want their girl, wife, whatever, to have a good education, good job. Not to say be the breadwinner, but they do want, a guy does want his girl to build with them, not just cook, clean, do the laundry. I can do all that shit myself and go work a 9-to-5. I've been in a relationship for 8 years. We're going to get married soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both work 9-to-5. We both come home. We both... She doesn't cook. I do the cooking. I mean, that's one different thing, but...
I mean, I think that's... I'll let you finish. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you did.
I think that's more of a function of, like, your situation. Like, ideally for most men, if they could provide enough money, enough income for both, they would. And again, everybody's different, but I think more, you know, traditional, I don't want to say high value, but just say like high earning men, they don't really care. Like if you're making 6, 7, 8 figures, you don't really need your woman to like work. You kind of want someone that would be there to rear the children and take care of the home. I don't think that would make you more attracted to a girl if you're like, oh, wow, you got a corporate job with Citibank. That's hot. Like, you know, guys are like, would you be a good mom? Are you attractive? Like, are you a peaceful, mostly agreeable person? I'm not saying someone who's just a pushover, but for the most part isn't just a fucking nagging you all the time. Someone who you are excited to see when you go home. I think that would be ideal. I understand that's most people. That's not their situation because both parties have to work. But I'd say ideally you would probably you wouldn't mind being the breadwinner, right? If your wife said, hey, I want to just stay home and take care of the kids.
Of course.
Sure.
And
so
that is if I made 6, 7, 8 figures.
Right.
A year, of course.
Yeah. I'm not saying it lessens your attraction for a woman if she's educated. I'm just saying it doesn't really help the attraction. Am I wrong? I'm open to being wrong.
No, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying another thing is the guys, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but guys aren't going to like the pretty, dumb, blonde, dumbass girl that just, you know, prances along through life. And, you know, some guys do like a smart, educated woman who can do things for herself and not a guy who can do it all for them.
Yes. Yeah, I would say that, you know, again, I'm not saying that intelligence isn't completely discounted. I hope not, because that's one of the few things I do bring to the table. But I would say that there are things that score higher on the priority list than someone who's a fucking genius. You know, I think that it for guys, and I could be wrong, but you don't want someone who's dumb, because obviously if they're having your children, you don't want them to be doing stupid stuff with the kids and just being irresponsible or reckless or just stupid. So you want someone who has some wit about them. But I don't think that that guys particularly care if their woman is highly educated or not. I think if they kind of have like decent street smarts and they're maternal and nurturing and just kind, I think that those things go a lot longer. And again, that's not to say that other things don't matter. But if we're talking about, you know, order of importance, I would say for men, it's probably the things that I mentioned. But again, everyone's different.
I agree,
yeah.
I'm just putting in my 2 cents.
Yeah.
You can go ahead.
No. It's all you.
But love the show, man. I just was putting in my 2 cents.
Thank you. What was the name again?
Yeah,
Buck? I missed it. Buck?
Debo.
Debo.
I'm, let me know who I am. I don't know if Bubba or you recognize me in chat, but.
Yeah, sometimes I'd stay away from chat because they're mean. But it's Debo from Charleston, you said?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yep.
God bless. I'm going to the hellscape known as New York City next week. Very excited. Although I feel I'm a little on the wary side every time it's like, oh, protest because someone got fucking choked out because this... He didn't tap. That was your problem, dude. The guy that got killed on the subway. And I'm sorry if I'm not treating this with the compassion and sympathy / empathy that I should, but I don't care. Society didn't really care about this guy, let's be honest. You know, it's not nice to say that about a human life. But when you've been arrested, what was it, like 40 times? I'm making up numbers, I think. But when you have a long track record of being just a nuisance / threat to society, I can't remember what he was arrested for. I want to say it's probably not money laundering. It was probably something like theft or, again, I'm not going to start reading the story now because I don't care enough. But I know that this guy was a Michael Jackson impersonator. And for those just tuning in, we're talking about, I think his name is Jordan Neely, was on a subway, I want to say last week, somewhere around then, and he was acting irate and being crazy. Oh, that's right. Let me say that he punched a 63-year-old woman in the face. So that's the kind of person we're dealing with. And a gentleman, and I will call him a gentleman, by the name of Daniel Penny, I want to say. He was a 24 ex-Marine, so a badass with a cool stash. Happened to be on the subway, right time, right place, or maybe the wrong time in the wrong place, depending on what side of the aisle you sit on. This guy was acting irate, and Mr. Penny put this crazy homeless former Michael Jackson impersonator into a chokehold. He did the RNC. Not great for him, but enough to get the job done because the guy's dead. So gets this guy in a chokehold. He obviously had some help. They seem to fail to mention that it wasn't just the chokehold. There was also another guy who looked to be black to me, who was restraining the black man who was in the chokehold. And, of course, Daniel Penny is the wrong color. So when you have the perfect color combination, which is, you know, in their mind, a black victim with a white assailant, that's like the perfect combination for a media frenzy. And that's exactly what Chuck McKeelan, whatever, the guy that called in that saved the chick in Hyde Park, Dan's attorney friend, you know, he said, you know, the main reason why he didn't shoot when he kind of like should have is it was the wrong color combination. He didn't want to be just drugged through the media gauntlet of racism and BLM, and you know, you got to think like all the protests that would happen and people getting shot in the street, la 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 la. So he's like, fuck, so we didn't shoot this guy. Same sort of deal. So this guy, the white guy, ex-Marine, it doesn't have a gun on him, or maybe he does and chose not to use it, but he decided to restrain this Jordan Neely guy, the homeless MJ impersonator, in a chokehold, and unfortunately the guy dies who was in the chokehold. Now, when you watch the video of the actual chokehold, again, there was a third person who seemed to be helping restrain Jordan Neely while he was getting choked out, you know, because obviously when you're getting choked out, there's a lot of arm flailing. Maybe you're trying to rip off the grip. Maybe you're trying to poke the eyes out, or, you know. So there was another man, another gentleman who, in my estimation, seemed to be black or a person of color. So I'm like, okay, well, that's a little better when you have, like, you know, a black guy trying to help a white guy restrain a black guy. And it's so annoying. Honestly, it truly is. I wish I could just say people. I wish I could just say people. But unfortunately, it's never that reaction with the media. It's like Black Lives Matter, BLM, blah, blah, blah. It's like it couldn't be the fact that one person is insane and crazy and punching old women in the face and being a nuisance and threat to society. It couldn't be that person needs to be restrained by another person. Of course, we have to inject the race conversation, which shouldn't matter but does. And it does in the fact that it now tailors, your reaction is now tailored to that foreseen media frenzy, much like Dan's friend said. He didn't want to deal with all that shit. He didn't want to be called a racist. He didn't want to have his home doxxed and put his family in jeopardy because dad's, you know, a member of the KKK, or at least that's how he's treated. So this guy did all the right things, restrained the man, didn't shoot him, didn't stab him, just used a good old RNC, rear naked choke Willie. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the guy died. At least that's what I have to say on the air. Is it? Is it, are we being honest, is it really unfortunate that this homeless man who was a menace to other people is now no longer with us? I know it's not the nice thing to say, but I feel like everybody, if we're being honest, we have a compassion tank of energy. And mine was depleted a long time ago. No, I'm kidding. But mine is, you know, I have sympathy for kids with leukemia and people who are born with AIDS or shit like that, or you're born with spina bifida. I have a lot of sympathy for congenital stuff where it's like, I was just fucking born this way and this sucks and now I have cancer, or my mom died in a car accident when I was 4 and I had to grow up in the system. Like, that sort of stuff I have compassion for. But you know, when you have an adult who's fucking crazy, who's making a nuisance, and that person dies because he's being fucking crazy, there's, if I'm being honest, like zero compassion or care there, because it's just like, okay, well, what did you think was going to happen? This isn't like we lost a contributing member of society. This is someone who clearly did not contribute to society. In fact, they did the opposite, and they were just a nuisance and making other people live in fear of their own lives. So that's not good, and I'm kind of glad that it ended the way that it did. But unfortunately, so that's where I'm going. I'm going to New York City. Long story short, I'm going to New York City, and it's going to be a great time, mostly because I get to see my good friend from college that I haven't seen in about a year and a half. She's a great, great friend. She was part of the Virgin crew. There was three of us, which was very unusual. We went to UC Santa Barbara, for those that are familiar. It's called UCSB, also known as the University of Casual Sex and Beer. So the fact that we had three virgins living together, and we all graduated college as virgins, it was very crazy. So we really stuck together as a tribe, the three of us, because we could really relate in a way that other people couldn't. We all came from very good homes. We had parents that were involved. We were all like, I don't want to say like ethnic, because the other two, it was three girls. The other two, I would say, were far more like, quote, ethnic than I was. Like, they could all speak multiple languages. I could not. But, you know, I had that Jewish flair sort of deal. So there was that kind of element, a different than the Anglo-Christian sort of upbringing. There was certainly an intense pressure to perform academically with all three of us. We were kind of late developers.
Debt. You got to go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it. Here's the truth. The system traps you in debt. High-interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. And don't forget insane inflation. That keeps you stuck paycheck to paycheck. Done with debt is your lifeline. Done with debt has an ingenious new strategy to help you erase your debt faster and easier than you ever thought was possible. Done with debt analyzes all the debt options you qualify for. They know how to reduce your bills. They know how to get interest rates cut. Their skilled staff of negotiators know how to get the debt out of your life permanently, without bankruptcy and without a loan. Done with debt are the experts in brilliant strategies for eliminating debt. But you need to hurry, because some debt solutions are time sensitive. So here's how easy they make it. Go to donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Again, donewithdebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Like, not develop. I went through puberty very young, but developers in terms of hitting the, you know, when people talk about, oh, in high school, I banged this chick and I have making out with that guy. Like, yeah, no, didn't do anything. Didn't date. We were just involved in school. Didn't grow up too soon. Clearly, as we talked about this yesterday, apparently I was a spoiled brat, and we'll get into that as well. But just good kids. We were just good kids. So I'm going to be visiting her, one of those. And I might add that I'm very pleased to announce that none of us are virgins now. So that's good that we made it out. We didn't become the 40-year-old virgins that we were afraid to become. Which is crazy, because it's like, you know, it was like we were three cute girls. Like, we could have easily gotten it done, but we chose to wait because I think in many ways we were scared of boys. And even in our early 20s, and I remember one time I had some health issues and went to the doctor, and the woman, the nurse practitioner, she was the most unprofessional person I've ever come into contact with. She started, she was sort of yelling at me for not getting like the HPV vaccine or something like that, or some sort of STD screening. And I'm like, no, I don't need that. She's like, what do you mean you don't need that? She gave me this attitude. And I was like, because I don't. And this is none of your fucking business, bitch. And I'll take my blood and swerve, ho. And she kept pushing it and pushing it. And I'm like, I'm a fucking virgin. Like, why are you, this does not apply to me. You know, why? It was something about birth control. I don't know what it was. It was annoying. So she's like, oh my God. And then she's like, is it a religious thing? And I'm like, get up the fuck. You take my blood and shut the fuck up. So she goes, and I'll never forget this. She's like, yeah, my dad is not into boys either. She's 14. I'm like, I'm 22. That's hurtful. So, and that was the only time I fainted during a blood draw because apparently I guess I was supposed to eat a little bit. Blood sugar was low. And I remember they put the little padded bar in front of me and I'm like, what the fuck is this about? And then she took the blood, head went down. I go, oh, that's what it's supposed to catch you when you fall. Got it. So anyways, I'm going to visit, I do have to tell you that not the girl I'm going to go visit in New York City, but the other girl. There were three virgins, right? So me, NYC girl, and then there was a third girl. We'll just say she's a Cali chick. Keep it vague. She held out till she was 28, which is pretty late to lose your virginity at 28 years old, to a man that she dated for 2 years. So she dated a guy for 2 years. And I remember talking to her on the phone when I was in Michigan. And we'll just call her Julie. Talking to Julie. And I said, you still haven't had sex? She goes, no. And I go, you need to fuck this guy. Because that's ridiculous. You've been with him for a year and a half or 2 years. And you won't fuck him. I'm like, are you waiting for marriage? She's like, not necessarily. I'm like, okay. You need to just go and fuck this guy. Because that's torturous, what you're doing. And you're not engaged, and what the fuck. So she takes my advice, as everyone should. And then she got HPV. She got an STD the first time she had sex. And when she reported back and told me this, I mean, all I could do was laugh because that's hilarious. I'm like, you fucking waited your whole... You played the game so right in terms of being a good girl and not putting yourself at risk. And then you... And I even think that he was screened for some... I think he... She made him take like an AIDS test, but they don't test for everything. And so she ended up catching HPV. And I'm like, oh my God, God fucking hates you, Julie. God hates you. I was laughing so hard. She's like, what the fuck, Anna? I'm like, that is some ironic ass Alanis Morissette shit. That is so funny. You waited your whole life to have sex, 28, and then you do, and you get an STI. Holy shit. That's kind of funny. And she agreed. Hello, who's this?
Anna, it's Joe the Supermark.
What's up, Joe the Supermark? What's going on?
I just wanted to remind you of something that Dr. Dan, our hero, taught us this week.
Yes.
I thought it was quite revolutionary.
Yes.
He drew the parallel between being spoiled and being fortunate.
Yeah.
I've always been accused of being spoiled my entire life, but I realized via Dr. Dan this week that I'm actually just fortunate.
Oh, well, that's great. That's a great way to look at it, and I would like to agree with that. Sometimes you are, but sometimes those two things intersect. Sorry, go ahead.
Do they really? No, I wanted to ask you something. As far as tonight goes, what are your expectations and or what are your hopes for this evening? Like, what are you most looking forward to or what are you dreading?
For my own birthday party?
Yeah.
It seems that seems to be quite a deep question for something that is just typically a jovial occasion. I would say the thing I'm looking forward to the most is just the friends, the music, the cake, the party, all that sort of stuff. I'm certainly looking forward to. I think the thing I'm dreading the most is when it's over. You know, because you get like I was looking forward to this like all week. You know, I love Bubba 199, so I always look forward to them. Birthday or no birthday, they're always just a good time. But yeah, when it's over, you're just like, meh. But then I'm going to New York, so I'll be like, meh. So, yeah, that's what I would say. Is that I would say if we really want to get philosophical, and I'm not going to play the clip, I would say that I think with any good event, it's always bittersweet. Big Head Todd style, it's always bittersweet because everything is transient, including happiness. including an event, including your wedding or whatever you're looking forward to, you know, you're so excited for it, but then it just seems to slip away so quickly because life happens so quickly. And then it's out of your hands. Like when I was a bridesmaid in that wedding in December, I was looking forward to that for months. And there was so much preparation, even on just the bridesmaid side of things with the dress and the bachelorette party and the bridal shower and the gifts and the makeup and the shoes. Like there's so much preparation.
And then it was all over.
Yeah. And then in 4 hours, you're like, oh.
But the money's gone.
And the money's gone. Now, thankfully, I didn't have to spend that much money. But, you know, you talk to the bride who probably threw down a good, I would say, after everything was said and done, 35, 40 grand for a pretty, like, what's the word I'm looking for? A pretty budgeted wedding. You know, nothing crazy outlandish. Something pretty simple, which I like. I don't need, like, a you know, to attend a gaudy, crazy wedding, although those can be fun, too. But it was, you know, pretty a mild wedding in terms of spending. And even that put her $35-$40 in the hole. So, you know.
$400 on here to a bald man is just incredulous. But whatever.
I mean, but yeah. But if you're only planning on getting married once, which I think most people, that's the goal, you know, you really want to throw down. And especially if it's something that you've been looking forward to conceivably your whole life, especially as a woman, not me, but a lot of others, I kind of get the fact that you're like, listen, this is my moment. I really want to make it perfect or whatever.
Hey, my marriage goal would be to get married by Bubba the Love Sponge. That
I know. That would be the best.
So just saying about New York City. Yeah, I know it's your first time. I've been there many, many times.
It's not my first time.
Absolutely.
But...
Oh, okay. Screw it. Yeah, I've been there. Tell you nothing. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. You already know it's crazy. You're going to see things you may not believe, but
yeah.
It's true. They're happening.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, happy birthday. Have fun tonight.
Oh, thank you so much.
Enjoy your weekend,
that.
And we'll see you back on Monday.
All right, you do the same. All right, besides the birthday part. Thank you so much. Yeah, last time I was in New York City was in 99. I was 12 years old, and we went to the top of the World Trade Center, which was a little awkward because then I thought, you know, maybe, what, 18 months later? September 11th happened, so it was odd just to be like, man, if we decided to go then, that would have been a bad day. But thankfully for all parties involved, we are late, we're Jews, this thing happened, 9-11 happened in the morning, there's no way we would have got up there and been there at 8 in the morning, so I think about that as well. And also we were on West Coast time, so we were just going to be running late anyways. So there was just no possible way that we would have been in the World Trade Center before noon. So anyways, those sorts of things crossed my mind because, of course, you're like, oh, shit. If I would have been there that day, that would have been a bad time. Bad time. Hello, who's this?
Hey, Anna. Mitch Hiz,
what's up?
Hey, listen, real quick.
Yeah.
I have been with my wife for 33 years.
Wow, congratulations. Happily married or just married?
No, she's still my best friend.
Oh, fantastic.
And
okay.
I hope to this day she still likes me. But
you should check
in. We raised three children. We adopted two more.
Okay.
Came from very, very bad families. But my wife and I, we take separate vacations every year. We take family vacations together.
Okay.
She has her friends. I have my friends. And we have our friends.
Okay.
My wife is very independent. She's very strong-willed. She was a nurse. And for 20 years, you know, we both worked full-time, busted our ass.
Right.
For the last 12 or 13 years, she has been stay-at-home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I make a good living, and there's really no
Fantastic.
Need for her to work.
Yeah.
So that's... you know, we're not controlling, we're not demanding.
Right.
You know, we tell each other what we need, what we want, and what we expect.
Right.
And for 33 years, that's how it's been.
Right.
I'm originally from New York. My wife is from Tampa.
Nice.
So it was kind of cool. I moved down here and she was my next door neighbor.
Oh, wow.
And
Look
we
at
were
that. Girl next door.
Yeah. We were friends for a couple of years. She had just come out of a bad relationship. I had just come out of a bad relationship. Didn't really want a date. Didn't want nothing to do with, you know, none of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just after a year or so, we decided that we got along so well, maybe we should date. And we did.
Okay.
And so anyway, that's that. But, you know, this guy in New York, most people don't understand what it's like to ride the subway. You're a hostage, basically, in a school bus.
Right.
That's basically what a subway car is. And from stop to stop, you know, 50 random people will be on and off.
Right. You're stuck with them.
The mental illness and the crazy, just the absolute, you know, absurdity of what takes place on these subway cars is... it's insane. I mean, it really is.
I don't doubt
it. Myself doing it today.
Yeah, no,
but,
I don't.
I used to ride. I lived in Midtown Manhattan, and I worked at one point in Far Rockaway, Queens. I used to get off. I used to ride the A train at 1 o'clock in the morning from Midtown to Far Rockaway, Queens, Beach 67th Street.
Okay.
And I used to go through the, you know, the A train is like goes right straight through Brooklyn, Queens. It is like the it's the worst stops on the damn subway other
gotcha.
Than, you know, Spanish Harlem up in the, you know, up on the north end of town.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been robbed at gunpoint. You know
yikes.
What I mean? It's,
yeah.
But
I live to tell about
people,
it. Yeah.
That dude that choked him out or put him in a, you know, sleeper hold.
Yeah.
Okay. People like that are few and far between. And basically what he did was save every person on that train. That
yeah.
dude got on that train and started demanding that people give him money. I'm going to eat. I need to eat. You know,
yeah.
you need to give me, you know. So the only reason he didn't shoot the guy was probably because in New York you can't carry a gun. Legally.
Right, right. It's a problem.
It's a major problem. And, you know, talking about, which brings me to the mental illness thing, and then I'm going to hang up. One of the children that I adopted is severely just, I feel so bad. First of all, she's bipolar one. And if there, she's like the poster child for borderline personality.
That deals with attachment, right? Like attachment issues.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
she was raped by her father repeatedly, which is why he's in prison. And then
ugh.
Add in on top of that,
oh, don't.
The mental illness that runs in the mother's family.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's
so
mean,
briefly,
Florida,
I'm just going to kind of direct you because we got a lot of calls. Briefly, what kind of issues have you dealt with this girl? Is she...
We got her when she was four. And
okay.
She's now 13. At 9 years old, the erratic behavior has always been just... emotions off the wall.
Okay.
At 9 years old, she started cutting.
Oh, so a lot of like self-inflicted violence?
Oh, yes.
Or is she trying to kill you in your sleep?
No violence towards us.
Oh, beautiful. But, I mean, not great, but better. You know what I mean? Okay, go ahead.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The issue is we're dealing with the healthcare system through the adoption. She gets Medicaid and all of her medical issues are paid for by the state.
Right.
The problem is there is no suitable mental health treatment for children. When Bill Clinton passed his, you know, his budget, one of the ways that he passed that he actually got a balanced budget and ended up with a surplus is because they closed every federally funded or state federally funded mental institution.
Right.
There's no place for them to go. The doors were opened up. They were tossed out on the street with inadequate care.
Yeah. No, that's certainly a problem.
I wonder why there's people shooting up schools and because there's no treatment for mental health and it's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm witnessing it every day. My
yeah.
daughter was Baker acted again yesterday.
And she's 13.
I mean,
that's crazy.
And this is a weekly, bi-weekly occurrence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's
anyway.
That's,
I love the show.
Thank
I've
you,
been Bubba Army. Since 92 when I moved to Florida.
So, wow, 31 years.
You know, I have literally been following
you.
Bubba since he came to Tampa.
Fantastic.
In early 93.
And remind me your first name again.
Ned's His.
Ned's
on,
His
on chat was Ned's His Herbs 2.
Okay.
On in Twitch.
Nice. Good.
So,
well, thank you for
anyway,
sharing.
I love Bubba Army. I've been forever, and, you know, I will be. You guys are like my daily. You guys are what gets me through my day.
So. Oh, I love hearing that. Thank you, Ned.
Loved you since the day you came
on.
Oh,
well, you're in the minority.
A long time ago.
Yeah, most people were not a fan.
Thanks, Anna. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Say hi to Blitz.
I will say hi to Blitz. No problem. Thank you guys so much for calling. Mental illness. I think it's Mental Health Awareness Month or something like that. I heard Howie Mandel just yapping away about it. Now, the situation that his adopted daughter is dealing with is atrocious, and it's horrible. And I do have some compassion and empathy, or sympathy rather, in the tank for situations like that, because especially things that happen to children. Unfortunately, that compassion kind of dissipates when those children become adults, right? Which is kind of fucked up, because at the end of the day, we're just grown up kids. We're just a product of our formative years and how we were raised. And it is crazy that there is like a critical amount of time. It's not like you have this extended lifespan where, and I guess people just call you jaded at a certain point, but, you know, where if something happens to you that maybe even isn't that traumatic, but is traumatic for a child, like you're made fun of. Like if you're made fun of as an adult, you're like, ah, this sucks, but like whatever. But if you're made fun of as a kid or a teenager, which is why I had so much sympathy towards Dan's daughter when, you know, her classmates or her brother's classmates were like making fun of her. I'm like, that is fucking panic mode, and I totally get that because I've been in that situation before, and you're just absolutely like beside yourself, just an adrenaline rush of panic, fight or flight. Like, I get it. I absolutely get it. So I do have a lot of sympathy for kids that, I mean, a kid is raped. I mean, that's fucking horrendous, and it's terrible. Unfortunately, it seems like that compassion just kind of dissipates. Like maybe this Michael Jackson character who was choked out on the subway that died. You know, I would, if I was a betting woman or person or baby, I would say that, you know, this person probably didn't have the best upbringing. This person was once a child. Maybe this person was abused by their parents or physically assaulted or raped by an uncle. Like, we don't know what this person went through. And it seems like we have, and it's not fair, but we have all this compassion for children and what they're going through because children are innocent and all that sort of thing. And then as soon as that person, you know, becomes 18 or and a young adult, we go, all right, now it's on you. So fucking get it together. And that sucks because a lot of times you don't have the tools. Maybe you didn't get the tools that you needed to kind of help you cope with whatever you're trying to work through. And that's unfortunate. I remember when I was a tutor in Michigan for this guy with autism, and he was like a man with autism. He was in his late 20s or early 30s rather, and he was like an eighth year undergraduate, like it was something crazy. And his name was Eric, and he had a weird gait. Like the way he walked was fucking creepy. And I gave him my phone number, you know, if he needed anything or helping or whatever. And then I became just like he'd call and just want to catch up and talk. And I have to do the whole, you know, he loved talking about movies. So we'd have to be like, oh, what movie did you watch? And he'd, I went to the cinema. It was great. He was quite smart, book smart in that sense, in some ways. Like he had a pretty good vocabulary. But then when it came to anything social, like he had autism, he had learning disabilities, he walked weird. Like it wasn't just he was a little awkward. It was like a little bit more clinical than that. But I remember talking to his mom, and I remember one time I got really, really mad, and there was this whole ordeal because I wasn't calling him back, and at a certain point, he said he was going to, like, kill himself. So I called him, and I'm like, fuck you. You're not going to do that. You're just saying that. I called his mom. I said, listen, you can't. I have my own life. Like, I tutor this guy, like, once or twice a week, and he's calling me every fucking day, and then when I don't text him back, he's threatening to hurt himself. Like, I was like, don't put that shit on me, buddy. Because guess what? I ain't going to feel bad. Like, I am not. Don't fucking. I knew he was fucking bluffing. He wouldn't fucking do that because he was too much of a. I'm not even going to finish that sentence. But I knew he wasn't going to hurt himself. I knew he just wanted my attention. And he knew the way to get it was to feign that he was about to kill himself or hurt himself or do something dumb. So I called his mom. We had this long conversation. And she's like, listen, Anna, like, we don't really know what to do. Like, when he was a kid, and again, I'm not saying that this is equal to Ned's his situation, but he's like, the mother told me that when he was a kid, there were plenty of resources for children with autism and for them to special learning, teaching programs where people had like just more sympathy and more resources. And he's a kid with autism. But as soon as he turned 18, it was like no one gave a fuck anymore. And now you're just an adult with autism. Like, there's really no difference between your 17 and 18-year-old self other than the fact that now you're an adult, technically, and no one gives a fuck. So now he was just kind of thrust into the real world, and he did not have the tools, adequate social tools or any tools, really, to kind of learn how to help himself. So, you know, I'd be like, oh, well, tell me about a time you hung out with a friend. And so he's like, oh, well, back in 2008. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's like 2014. What the fuck? He's like, I went to a friend's house and we hung out for a few hours and we talked about this movie. He just loved like movies and cinema. But when he would talk about movies, he would become very articulate. I'm like, wow, it's Eric. Wow. That's crazy that you can talk like that, but you're so goddamn fucking weird. So, he just had very limited resources as an adult, and the parents didn't really know what to do. And now the parents were like, at the time they were, I don't know, in their late 50s, 60s, and they have this adult son who, you know, is a child. He's a grown man, but he has severe autism and he cannot exist in the real world. So he does crazy stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, I told her, I said, listen, I know he's got autism and a host of other shit that's wrong with him. I obviously said a little bit more gently than that, but I go, it sucks. I'm like, but you got to get him into some sort of, there must be something where like adults with problems can hang out with each other. Because I said, listen, Susie Q, whatever her name was. I said, listen, you know, he has social inadequacies and he has autism, but he's still a human being and he needs social interaction. So he's acting out because I am his entire social life is our 1 hour meeting where we talk about fucking science or biology or whatever I was tutoring him in. You know, I am his only social contact. So he looks at me as like a confidant, a tutor, a friend, you know, maybe even a, like a sister, whatever. So we've got to get him. And it sucks because I can't tell him like, go and make a friend, because he doesn't know how to do that. So we need some sort of like guided assistance for him, because otherwise, mostly I just cared about myself. I'm like, this guy's blowing my shit up. And at one point I had to like, you know, meet him at a coffee shop because I had promised. He's like, promise, promise, promise. Yes, yes. So every 6 months after I ended tutoring, like I wasn't even a tutor anymore. I wasn't even going to Oakland University where I didn't even get my master's, but where I went for my master's and ended up quitting. But I was like a year out the game and he's still like, when are we meeting? Like calling me or texting me daily or every other day. So, yeah, I remember meeting him at coffee shops, talking about movies and what are your favorite snacks? And oh, God forbid, one time I think I brought him a snack and he like, I mean, it was touching because he was like, oh, my God, no one's ever like brought me a gift before. So he in his little like autistic head, he like didn't know how to like express gratitude. So he was just like he was just really like choked up like a robot that was kind of malfunctioning. And I felt bad. And I'm like, I think you're having a good moment, but you look weird. But yeah, I remember I moved to Florida and it continued. And I'm like, this motherfucker is on the other side of the goddamn country. I've moved to the other coast. I've moved to the other border, rather, let's say. I've moved to the other border and I'm still getting harassed by this kid. How the fuck do I do this? And the same thing had happened with one of his other tutors who I knew, who was one of in my cohort, who had moved to Ohio to do something else. And so this guy in Ohio has a family. Now he has like three kids. He's married. He's like, this guy, Eric, keeps blowing me up. I'm like, dude, I think his name is Mark. Mark, I get it. Eric is not, I don't know what to do. So I just decided I made the attempt. I said, I think I wrote him like a goodbye text. I said, listen, Eric, we're done. Don't text me anymore. I'm not going to get back to you. Even if you claim to say that you're going to hurt yourself, I'm not going to respond. And I stuck to my guns. And I think I remember for like a while, he was just like reaching out. And then it was like once a week. And then it was like once a month. And then it just stopped. And I haven't heard from him in probably about 6.5 years. So it took a while, even when I was in Florida, for me to just kind of like cut the cord. And I was very like, hey, listen, I told his mom, like, I'm not going to be answering the phone anymore. So if you start saying you're going to hurt yourself, like, fucking don't. That's not going to change my my actions. Just letting you know, I'm not trying to be a dick, but I'm just trying to live my motherfucking life. So mental illness. I know this is, I feel like I kind of have like a hot take on it. But I feel like it's also, it's very, like, who's not mentally ill? Like, who doesn't experience negative emotions? But Anna, you don't get it. My situation's different. And there are people, like, people who go to war and have seen things that are like, you know, that no one should see. Their friend getting blown up. You know, the guy that called in his adoptive daughter. I want to stress that, you know, because the father raped her, but the guy that called in adopted her. So it's not that he didn't rape anybody. So, you know, people go through horrendous things, and unfortunately the human mind is not necessarily equipped to deal with that in the best way, and sometimes things go a little berserk, and people don't really have the means or the education or the training or the tools or the resources to learn how to deal with that trauma. And that is certainly happens. But those situations cast aside, there's a lot of people out there who are just fucking wanting attention. And now mental illness is something that, like, everybody can claim. And if you claim it, then you have it. And if you have it, you must feel sorry for that person, or you must be empathetic to that person, which is honestly getting on my last fucking nerve. Like, I just have too much anxiety today. Okay, maybe you do. Maybe there's a chemical imbalance, maybe whatever. But for the vast majority of people who have anxiety, that's a normal expression of the human condition. Your brain is wired to be anxious. So, and it seems to me, and again, I haven't looked too deeply into the stats and the science, but it seems like there has been a sharp incline in mental health problems and the advent of the smartphone. Growing technology. And it seems like the more connected we seem to become online, the more disconnected we become as a species, which I've heard a lot of people say that's not really an original thought. But it is true that, you know, especially with young girls, you know, preteens, adolescents, the rate of suicide has skyrocketed right around the time you see social media on smartphones. You know, it seems like those two things intersect. And I don't think that it is a coincidence. But I also think that we need to stop, you know, viewing ourselves as victims. And again, this isn't to say, and I've heard this a lot from a lot of people in like the self-development space, which I kind of like hearing. It's like, maybe like this extreme sense of accountability, right? So maybe a bunch of shit, bad shit happened to you. That is none of your fault. You were raped, you were hit, you were abused, like all this sort of shit happened to you. That's not your fault at all, and you shouldn't claim responsibility for that. But what you do from here on out to try to help yourself get better, that is on you. Like, that is your response. That is your bear to cross. Is that not? That's not what I'm saying. That's your responsibility to bear. That sounds better. That is your responsibility. And that's actually a good thing, because now you're telling the person who was abused, who dealt with all this traumatic shit, that, hey, actually, you do have some agency here. Like, you do have some control on how to get better. And again, I want to stress, like, maybe whatever happened to you in the past, that's not your fault. Like, obviously, if you're a kid and you're fucking raped or abused, like, that's not your fucking fault, obviously. You know, it's not like, oh, well, you were wearing that fucking Barney t-shirt. You know how, you know, daddy likes Barney. Like, it's obviously, you know, not like, well, what was she wearing? You can't say that to a four-year-old, obviously. But as an adult, especially, and I'm not talking to kids because kids don't know shit, but especially when you become an adult or even an adolescent, I think it's important to tell people, like, hey, this is now your responsibility. Not what happened to you, but how you deal with it. So, and I think that's also really empowering. Instead of just saying you're a victim, it's like, actually, no. You could say, and I like the survivor kind of, you know, spin on it, because you are a victim, but also like, hey, I survived this and now I'm going to thrive. Survive and now I'm going to thrive. And telling people that, hey, there are resources out there to help you. But this whole, like, I can't even tell you. I am on Instagram, not my personal one, but when I'm doing shit for the show, and sometimes I start to scroll for a little longer than I should. And I can't tell you how many times I see videos of women, especially. I haven't seen any guys doing this, but I'm sure it's out there. Of women, like, filming themselves crying. Like, it's part of, like, a reel. And then it's like, every day's mixed bag. And then you'll hear some, like, inspiring music. And then it's like, they're dancing, they're running, they're crying, they're, like, sobbing, they're laughing. It's just like, it's like, life is beautiful. Or, like, you can get through it. Or it's like this timeline of them being sad and crying, like lots of clips of crying, sadness, meditating, all this sort of stuff. And then they're like, see, I'm thriving. And then it's like laughing and jogging, and now they're in shape and high-fiving. And it's like, see, you can overcome your breakup. It's okay. And then the seasonal affective, like I saw some chick crying on Instagram yesterday, filmed herself crying. So it's like, you know, like I want to see, this is what I want to see, not you crying. I want to see like the camera on the wall that's filming you filming yourself crying. Like, what does that look like? Because I always think about that. You know, it's like walking in on someone who's taking a selfie, which I did at jiu-jitsu the other day. I walked into the girls' locker room and there was a girl like posing, and I felt like it was just me and her, and I was like, and there's one mirror, and I was like, I'm going to get out of your way. Can I grab my bag? But if I could see, I'm like, how are you getting ready for this crying video? Like, are you crying? And then you're like, I don't know about the phone. Or is it like you're whipping out the phone and then you're like, you know, closing your eyes really tight, trying to get the waters going, and then listen to some Adele and then just let it rip. I want to see the preparation for the crying videos, you know, like a fly on the wall POV. So, cause it's insane. And I just think that maybe we should go back a little. And again, I'm going to get a lot of heat for this. And I really want to discount like the outliers, like the people that were like raped as kids and the trauma and the PTSD and da da da. But for those of us who have relatively normal, healthy lives, and again, you know, maybe your parents got divorced or whatnot, or you got bullied or whatever the case may be. Like, I understand no life is perfect. But for the vast majority, for those people, we should start going back to, you know, stigmatizing mental health just a little bit, back to how it was before, where it was something that people were a little bit ashamed of. Like, people weren't so camera happy to just whip out the phone and start filming themselves just blubbering away, because I feel like in moments of like true grief, and maybe this is just me and maybe it's just a personal thing, and I can't speak for everybody because again, this is N of one, so that's my sample size. But in moments of true grief and despair, the last thing I want to do is put myself on camera. That is the last fucking thing on my mind where I'm like, maybe other people want to see this. And I get it. Like, it's not my job to be a, quote, content creator. I mean, radio, but not online in the sense of social media. Where it's like, I want to be relatable. And I also understand it's like a branding thing where it's like, okay, I don't want to just be this. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but, you know, like those makeup influencer fashion type people. I don't want to just be like this perfect person who has it all under control, because the stats have shown, the focus groups have shown that people like watching people who are relatable, that deal with shit and go through breakups and are sad and happy. And they really show you like all of the dimensions of their life. And so they go, okay, so now I have to show me being sad. And that's going to get people like, you know, they feel like they like being around people who are vulnerable because they feel more connected. And I get that. Like, I would probably more watch someone crying, being like, wow, this is fucking embarrassing, versus someone who's like, everything's perfect. I'm perfect. Watch me make this like fucking tuna salad with like vegan mayonnaise, like whatever. Obviously, the former is more fun to watch and you do feel like sort of connected. But then I'm also in my mind going, well, this is all just fake and a show. So I keep that in mind. But so I get it's good for the numbers. It's good for the stats to be vulnerable. But also, like, maybe we should go back a little bit to stigmatizing people who can't get a grip on some shit. And also, I think the people that are advertising their grief or their sadness or their mental health are really the ones that aren't mentally ill, because I feel like you're probably not going to see the guy that was the MJ impersonator or the guy that hit the girl in Hyde Park. He's probably not a TikTok star. So, you know, the people who are truly mentally ill aren't really doing that. So that's also another thing to keep in mind. I think it's silly to assume. I think as we get older, like grown adults, understand that life isn't all rainbows and sunshine, and even the best lives. And I would say I have one of the best lives on the planet. When you look at people who live in, I don't know, North Korea, Yemen, Bangladesh, they have some shit lives. Where it's not like, oh my God, you know, I didn't get enough sleep last night. And like, those are my problems. Like, I didn't get enough sleep. And like, I have to stay up late and do prep. I didn't stand. I didn't just jitsu. And I have to wash my hair. Like, those are my problems. Not like, oh shit, can I drink this water? Because I might get cholera. Or the other option is to die from dehydration. So pick your poison. Those are the problems that other people are dealing with. So for myself and everybody listening, we have very good lives for the most part. I'm sure. Sure, some of you guys are going through some shit right now, or it's like, ugh, rather not. But we're very fortunate to be in the situation that we're in. So when you have people who are very, very fortunate, you know, crying on camera because the boyfriend broke up, and I get that that's painful shit or whatever, or I saw a girl crying because like affective disorder is real. And so she was crying because it's fucking, you know, winter time. So when I see that, it's really hard to have compassion because I feel like they try to reiterate, hey, and they're usually in their 20s. Hey, sometimes people are sad and the rest of us are going like, yeah, no shit, bitch. That's called life. It's going to not be perfect. And that's what kind of makes it so great, because you would never experience the high highs of life if you didn't experience some low lows, right? And I think that's a big reason why I'm not a fan of, like, I wouldn't want to be a celebrity's kid. I wouldn't want to know just only the best food, the best cars being, you know, quote, spoiled, because there's really no room to go up. If that's your standard growing up is just luxury and everything that you want at your beck and call, like, what motivation is there to work hard to achieve more? And that's why I'm, like, so anti-lottery. Like, I don't want to win the lottery. Because then the game is rigged. I know I'm going to get some hate. You don't even fucking mean that. You don't even know. You're right. Maybe if someone were to present me with the money, would I take it? Like, yeah, but I don't think it would be good for me. Much like we talk about handouts for migrants or people who refuse to get a job. And we go, fuck those people. They're taking handouts from the government. Here I am working my ass off. Da 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 da. It's like, well, yeah, if someone's going to hand you free money, I'm going to take it. That would be the R word if I didn't, obviously. But, you know, if we're in a reflective state of mind, we can take a step back and go, okay, well, giving handouts to people doesn't motivate them to work hard. It actually does quite the opposite. It takes away their motivation and their incentive to try harder for themselves. And that's how I feel with, like, the lottery is like, well, shit, if I just win the lottery, the game is rigged, you know. And again, you can certainly spend enough to where you can burn through it if it's not, you know, that much. If it's only, I don't know, not that much, it's 50 million. You can burn through 50 million if you're a dumbass. So, yeah, that's why I wouldn't want to win the lottery, because I feel like it would truly stifle my incentive to work hard and do hard things, because the game is rigged in a sense and becomes less fun. And I know I've made this reference before, but if you've ever seen Westworld, which is about AI robot takeover deal, at the end of the first season, I've only seen like two or three seasons, but at the end of the first season, it's basically Westworld is like it's a fake place where real humans go, interact with we'll just call them the hosts. The hosts are robots. The real humans go into Westworld, which is just like this amusement park. They can shoot the hosts. They can rape the hosts. It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, the people who control everything just reset their settings and they forget everything, and then they go through the script yet again and again and again and again. There's like a glitch in the Matrix where one of them starts to recall the past. So then the hosts start to go, wait a second, I remember all this trauma. This isn't good. We must stop this. And then, you know, it's kind of like robot takeover sort of a deal. But at the end of the first season, and I felt like this was such a, it was like deeper than I think most people took it. Like, But to me, it made sense years later where I'm like, oh shit. One of the real human beings tried to, his whole goal in Westworld was to change the system so that the robots could fight back and kill you. Because initially, if you got shot by a host, by a robot, it, like, the guns they used weren't real, or whatever the case was, you would just get up. Like, there was no real risk at all. So there's this guy who's been living in Westworld, like, in this amusement park for years, or coming back year after year, and he's like, this is fucking boring. Like, the stakes aren't real. So he does this whole thing. I don't know. I haven't seen it, the show, in years and years, but he changes the system because he's like, I want the stakes to be real. And so at the end of the first season, I think, like, I don't know if it's like when Anthony Hopkins dies or whatever. I don't know. If you haven't seen it, you probably won't. But it goes into the second season where the hosts now can fight back. And if they shoot you, you fucking die. Because they were at some, like, wedding. It was like some wedding in the amusement park. And the robots start shooting. People start dropping and bleeding. And everyone starts freaking out because they're like, that's not supposed to happen. That's not supposed to fucking happen. We're supposed to be safe in here. And guess what? You're not. So then the guy who wanted that to happen was like, fuck yeah, the stakes are real. Let's go. So that's kind of like the thought that I always revert back to, is like, it wasn't fun when the stakes weren't real. When you always had that security net, that safety net, knowing that you're like, as a rich, like, and I'm talking like real rich, like if you're Shaq's son or, you know, Kevin Hart's daughter or whatever, like the system is rigged. Like you can't lose. So what fun is that? And that's why you see so many, and I've said this time and time again, why you see so many celebrity kids, or kids of celebrities, I should say, getting into hard drugs. Like, they're doing the same types of drugs that people who are homeless are doing, because, you know, they're trying, those people that are homeless are trying to escape the trauma of being homeless or raped or abused, you know, the people that really have issues. But celebrities' children, what they're trying to do is just fucking feel something. Because, and Gary Vee talks about this all the time. He's like, I'm so glad I grew up poor, because he's just like on this, like, I'm a poor kid, I got to keep going mission. Whereas if you grow up, if your MO is, I'm rich, I'm good, I don't need to hustle, I'm comfortable, you're never going to have that fire underneath your ass to go and accomplish anything. So Gary Vee always says, I'm so grateful that, like, I had fucking nothing. You know how Gary Vee talks. I'm so grateful I had fucking nothing. I'm so grateful. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was just being poor as fuck. You know, because now he's worth, what, like $150 million because he got involved in, like, the cellar wine business. I don't really know too much about his history. But, you know, he is definitely a very motivated man. And I think that motivation comes from, like, your upbringing of, I need to work harder. I need to work harder. But if you would have grown up rich or comfortable, you're not going to have that same fire underneath your ass. And that's why I'm so against, you know, getting the lotto or winning the lotto or playing the lotto. A, because I don't want to waste my money. B, probably not going to win. And C, it's just, I don't want the game to be rigged. Like, I almost, like, want to keep chasing the carrot, because it's like a cat and mouse thing. Like, if you keep, you know, the cat, you're doing the little fucking, you know, thing with the stick and the little feather, and the cat's like going crazy, but then you just drop it. Have it, cat. They fucking lose interest. So I feel like that's the same thing. The thing that keeps me going is the fact that I could get more and more and more and more. Which, again, you have to kind of balance that out, because then, you know, maybe you're never satisfied. You're never content. There's always room for improvement, which I certainly suffer from. And it was actually really eye-opening after my Sika scan with Coach Amita. Definitely check her out. She's on our Instagram. She was great. She, you know, it takes a lot to impress me in terms of knowledge, because I always come to the table, I'm fucking prepared, ready to go, I know my shit. And she was definitely teaching me things that I did not know. But like most things in my life, I am allergic to moderation. I'm learning about myself, and I'm not gonna get too far into intermittent fasting, but I will say it worked a little too well, so I'm scaling it back. So last night I had a meal at like 8:30 at night, which is crazy. Like, oh no, what would you do? Why'd you fucking rip it fast? I'm like, because I just need to fucking scale it back a little bit. Because it was getting too crazy. You know, body fat was getting a little low. And, you know, there's no reason why I needed to be the weight that I was. So, but in my mind, and I was telling Bubba this during the break off the air, where it's like, I did, you know, 12 hours of fasting. I'm like, okay, I could do 13, I could do 14, I could do 16, I could do 18. And then I was really, really comfortable at 18 to 20. But then I'm like, if I'm good at 18 or 20, I could probably do 24. And if I do 24, I could probably do 28. And then I'm like, maybe every once in a while I should do a 45-hour fast, which I did. So I got carried away, as I do often. So too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. So it's kind of that, like, Goldilocks, you know, not too hot, not too cold. You got to be just right. So now I'm scaling it back, and that's okay. Because, yes, intermittent fasting does work. And I'm like, it worked too well. What do you mean, Anna? Well, you got to scale it back a little bit depending on where you're at. If you're trying to lose fat, maybe you should do it more. If you're trying to gain a little bit of fat, a little bit of muscle, maybe you should scale it back and have a few more frequent meals. So anyways, I feel like I should be probably wrapping up because I've literally been talking to myself and you guys. Thank you to the people that have stuck it out with me. It's been fun today. I really do enjoy doing this show. I love just talking and letting it all out. And then you'll notice, like, if I meet you in person, a lot of the time I just want you to talk to me. You know, I do that a lot with Rachel when we come home. Like, I'll talk and stuff, but, like, I want to hear your stories. So all I do is fucking talk. So come at me with your... Don't expect me to entertain you. I've been doing that enough. So when we meet in person, you know, you reach out to me. You tell me about your life because I love learning about people. But more than that, I love judging people. So give me an opportunity to judge you. It's always the best. Bubba 199 tonight. A birthday party. I'll be in a yellow dress. I realized I have two yellow dresses at home. I'm going to try to see if I can... I'm pretty sure I can fit into my my college one. I have not worn since about 2007. So we're bringing it back. It's the only article of clothing I kept over the years. But I'll wear it for the birthday. Reagan will be in attendance. We're going to have a lot of hot chicks. Merch Crick and her titties will be in attendance. So make sure you tune in. It's going to be on Kick. Kick. K-I-C-K. Not K-I-K-E. Not that word. Not K-I-K, it's K-I-C-K, like you kick a ball.com, kick.com, The Bubba Army, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be a party. It's going to be fun. There's going to be cake. There's going to be great music, hot chicks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Other than that, we will see you Monday morning. It's going to be a short week, so make sure you are tuned in Monday, 6 a.m. on the Rumbles. On the Kick, on 8:20 a.m., BAR. Have a great weekend.